Excerpt from the poem America by Allen Ginsberg, read by Allen Ginsberg.
America, I've given you all, and now I'm nothing. I can't stand my own mind. America, when will we end the human war? Go fuck yourself with your atom bomb. I don't feel good. Don't bother me. I won't write my poem till I'm in my right mind. America, when will you be angelic? When will you take off your clothes? When will you look at yourself through the grave? When will you be worthy of your million Trotskyites? America, why are your libraries full of tears? Are you going to let your emotional life be run by Time magazine? I'm obsessed by Time magazine. I read it every week. Its cover stares at me every time I slink past the corner candy store. I read it in the basement of the Berkeley Public Library. It's always telling me about responsibility. Businessmen are serious. Movie producers are serious. Everybody's serious but me. It occurs to me that I am America. I'm talking to myself again. America, you don't really want to go to war. America's them bad Russians. Them Russians, and them Chinamen, and them Russians. The Russia wants to eat us alive. The Russia's power mad. She wants to take our cars from out our garages. Her wants to grab Chicago. Her needs Red Readers' Digest is his. America, this is quite serious. America, this is the impression I get from looking in the television set. America, is this correct?
Anaxagoras 14. The third day of the trial began with all assembled without ceremony or theater, but all gathering to the hall of the Tyrannosaurus on time for the session to begin promptly. This time, the chair announced at the outset that Dr. Casey shall be permitted opportunity to address those who shall make statements, that she shall ensure this procedurally, accepting, of course, that Dr. Casey may decline as she wished. Dr. Casey nodded at her. I felt relieved. I felt that perhaps this should not end as I feared it would. Rand was not, however, distressed by the announcement, or at least showed no distress. He had organized three piles of evidence on the table and seemed to be prepared to address them serially for some effect. He put the first pile upon his podium. He raised the item and addressed the chair, explaining that he had copies of all of the exhibits to be presented today for all those present in the hearing, including Dr. Casey, that he intended to address the matters as they were given to be reviewed, that some of these items were classified documents of the federal government, and he was required by law to recover them after consideration, and that the items could be referenced but could not be cited verbatim in the transcript. The chair nodded. Edith smiled. Rand again began in summation. His opinion, is fact. Being certain of his facts and his opinion, being certain his opinions are based on fact, being certain of himself, his opinion was fact. He declared, therefore, with factual certainty, that Edith is a seditious, communist foreigner. He reminded us that while she came to this country from an ally, she came from an England very different than the image we may have of it. An England that was overrun by Fabians. That her liberality about sexual mores was endemic among the Oxford intellectuals who nurtured or misled her. Or perhaps from her anxious, alienated Catholicism, her perversion was to be understood. But why did she not become a naturalized citizen of the United States? Did she not love this nation that had taken her to its bosom? This generous nation which rescued her with its gentle outreach from the starvation and rags and desolation of the bombed-out cities of Europe? Rand said, "But even now she curses the hand that helped her. She calls our leaders wicked. She calls our soldiers killers. She posts the flag of our enemy on her doorstep. I do not say these things from my own witness. I did not know these things about her. though I have known her for 17 years. Leaning forward to speak with quiet alarm, Rand asserted, "Dr. Casey has hidden her political beliefs and predilections from all of us for decades. She has come to America a faithless, ungrateful, cynical malcontent. But the Federal Bureau of Investigation in its counterintelligence program has been watchful, has been monitoring our seeming innocent professor of psychology, and recently disclosed to the dean its files, having concluded that the university, one which famously, you will recall, gave scientific discoveries that armed America with its atomic arsenal, without which we may have been Soviet slaves today, may be harboring subversion, unwittingly, even while it must maintain heightened security for its many important enterprises, many of which are highly sensitive or even top secret activities in certain not to be named scientific research laboratories here. And therefore, they have asked us, we finders of fact, to act upon potential threats with prudent prejudice to protect our university and our nation." He raised a sheet of paper that his minions now distributed among us. "This police report charges Dr. Casey with recent crimes during the Democratic National Convention. The police found her obstructing justice, interfering with lawful arrests, and charged her with disorderly conduct and resisting arrest. You have no doubt seen the footage on television." The dutiful finders, raptly following the presenter, nodded like children to be promised ice cream if they behaved well. "These charges are incidental to our concern. Dr. Casey shall have her day in court and can answer to her guilt then. However, you will find related to this matter this additional report being passed among you by the undercover police officers of Chicago working in cooperation with the FBI concerning Dr. Casey's involvement with conspirators of the riots during the convention. Photographs, which my assistant is passing among you, shall illustrate some of the content therein reported. Here, Dr. Casey is found consorting with leaders of the recent riots, is seen providing support for them, blankets and other things, and meeting with them. This one young woman that you see here is one Elizabeth Cohen, a.k.a. Rachel Nelson, is the principal organizer of the MOBE at the university and a known member of the Weather Underground, the radical terrorist organization, and a known communist. Ms. Cohen lived in Dr. Casey's home as the lesbian lover of Josephine Baker, whom, by the way, is under the age of consent. Miss Cohen is shown here with the Viet Cong flag that was seen posted to the front door of Dr. Casey's home on July 4th of this year, as you will see by the photograph being passed among you. The next item to be distributed among you is the most important evidence among these. It is the police report and affidavit of Elizabeth Cohen, a.k.a. Rachel Nelson, taken by the Chicago police upon her arrest the night of August 28, the very night that Dr. Casey was arrested, but not for such misdemeanors charged to her, but for felonious conspiracy to disrupt the Democratic National Convention, a seditious act of subversion to our democracy, with the intent to commit violence, to damage public and private property, and additionally was charged with conspiracy to manslaughter by the infusion of toxic chemicals into the Chicago water supply. Fortunately, the FBI and Chicago police have had Ms. Cohen under intensive surveillance for over a year, including during the period when Dr. Cohen, Casey, harbored her in her house. In her affidavit, Ms. Cohen admits her relationship with Dr. Casey and acknowledges their shared political sympathies, and Dr. Casey's explicit and tacit support of these radical terrorists and their tactics. You may read for yourself. You will note at the bottom of page 2 that she expressly declares that Dr. Cohen, Casey rather, is a fellow traveler, a lesbian, and a little more explicitly later declares that Dr. Casey is a Stalinist. Rand put the pages down as the finders pored over them, looking up shortly to see for what cause he had paused. His gaze was fixed upon Edith as he put to her the important question, which no doubt all of them also had in mind. Dr. Casey, are you now, or have you ever been, a member of the Communist Party? Edith, whose eyes shone with merry tears, had been ready to burst and could not restrain a laugh at the question. Dr. Rand blinked, but seemed also strangely bemused, like this was a farce in which he, the foolish actor, was obviously found out, and he too, while holding it back, like he was holding his breath, but could no longer contain it, burst out in one loud blast. Pah! Winslow, alarmed, rose out of her seat. Edith herself stopped laughing, while Rand seemed to have lost control of himself, again attempting to disguise his continuing, almost hysterical laughter as coughing, as an uncontrollable jag of it, waving for excuse. He left the room suddenly, attended by his worried, high-heeled minions, and Winslow mincing after them. The chair, a plum, raised her eyebrows and said nothing at first, but seeing that Rand did not return, suggested that we recess for an hour. Edith reminded her that the sensitive papers should be first collected. The chair thanked her. I saw Edith in the hallway as we departed. I said only, "Do not think this is petty, Edith. For God's sake, defend yourself." "How shall I do that, Dr. Hawthorne?" She shrugged, smiling. She touched my hand. "Really, it will be fine. Do not worry for me." The finders broke into small groups for luncheon, but I was alone. My sympathies known, I was ostracized. I wondered if I should also be accused of crimes. Confronted with choice, our vice president-elect said a week ago, the American people would choose the policeman's truncheon over the anarchist's bomb. Law and order shall prevail. Opinion has hardened like cement. No one can hear or understand the other, if only for that solid brick of it between their ears. I'm glad for the moment that I teach poetry, to which all are indifferent. Perhaps they will not notice me. An intellectual is a man who doesn't know how to park a bike, our vice president-elect sneers. Yes, I laugh agreeably. Yes, you are so right. Please, let me dance for you here on this table. I shall play the fool, or must be found out. I have not hated myself so much in all my life as I did in 1969. I was frightened. I said nothing and I did nothing. That is how these things always happen. We were held out in the hall for an additional hour and a half, the door guarded by men in dark suits wearing sunglasses, though it is a gray, wintry day outside and we are indoors in a hallway with no windows. They did not speak. They were rigid, although they turned to peer down the hallways from time to time. But of course there was no one in the hallways. Being between semesters, there is hardly anyone on the entire campus. I looked where they looked, reflexively. It heightened our anticipation. Edith seemed to know there was a delay, and did not arrive until just after the secret police, pushed open the doors and held them for all of us to enter. Rand was already in the room, at the podium where it had been moved to the floor to the left side of the proscenium stage. Behind him, triangulating that corner of the great room, a floor-to-ceiling, heavy, black curtain had been hung, casting a shroud of shadow across the room, and dulling the formerly bright sounds with funereal solemnity. The podium had been moved to the floor in front of it, and Rand stood against that blackness, darkly dissolving into it. Dark-suited guardians in sunglasses flanked the edges of the curtain. Almost invisible against the curtain in his dark suit, except for his white face in the mask of his sunglasses and his white folded hands before him, another guardian stood immediately behind Rand. The heavy curtain had the astonishing effect of even swallowing the clatter of the minions' high heels as they were quickly darting in and out to port Rand's papers and accoutrements. We all took our seats. The chair came in last, escorted by three of the dark-suited men in sunglasses who stood around her as she sat herself on her throne. Edith herself seemed bowled over by the theater. There was something of prestige and distinction that one might take ironically from such elaborate show. I mean, who was Edith Casey, really? What had she really done to have engaged the full force and measure of the United States Federal Bureau of Investigation and Director J. Edgar Hoover? The truth, the secret of it all, must be something much more profoundly malicious than these mundane accusations against her. The allusion to the Manhattan Project, was that it? Was Dr. Casey a Soviet spy? Now Rand's absurd question loomed. It was on the lips of all her accusers. Even I lingered upon it. Another man in a dark suit without sunglasses rose up from a folding chair hidden behind the podium where Rand stood. A middle-aged man with short-cropped gray hair. He whispered to Rand in an aside, then returned to his hidden chair. One of the minion handed me a sheet of paper and a black plastic government ballpoint pen. All of us, including Dr. Casey, received a pen and a sheet of paper. The paper was embossed with the FBI imprimatur. It said, National Security Agreement of Secrecy, or something to the effect. I think my head swam. Rand bade us sign it. He merely said it was necessary, and then upon the urging of the secret whisperer behind him, he more thoroughly explained that our signature shall serve to be acknowledgment that, forewarned of the criminal penalty of any violation of this agreement, we shall not disclose what we hear or see in the proceedings today, nor any of the content of official papers and evidence such as we may have seen or been informed of, or shall see or be informed of in this proceedings or related activities. No one hesitated to sign. The minion collected the papers efficiently. Dr. Rand looked behind himself, took his cue, and began. This afternoon we shall conclude upon the factual evidence presented this morning concerning the allegations of subversive and seditious political activities of Dr. Casey. Again, these are matters I knew nothing about until enjoined by the dean to incorporate them into our investigation of professional improprieties. Behind this curtain, Rand gestured, is seated a covert agent of the Federal Bureau of Investigation who has been monitoring the activities of Dr. Casey. Having been assigned to infiltrate left-wing pro-communist groups and activities at the university for more than 3 years. She is a special agent of the Federal Bureau of Investigation with 8 years of distinguished service specially trained in counterintelligence. Of her identity, I can tell you no more, as I'm sure you must understand. Both because of the concern for her safety and security, and because certain ongoing covert activities during these perilous times may be jeopardized by inadvertent disclosures. You will, nonetheless, hear in her own voice critical testimony concerning Dr. Casey's activities, which I am certain shall be as sobering and shocking to you as it was for myself when I first heard of them. For our transcripts, he directed the transcriber, identify her as Witness X. Witness X, Rand turned toward the curtain, in the direction immediately behind him, where the guardian in dark suit with sunglasses stood stiffly, staring at us, or blind to us for all we knew, his hands folded in that official piety. His posture accentuated his broad, athletic frame. Yes, sir, a voice behind the curtain answered. Please freely relate your testimony. I do not want to guide you in any way. Please tell our finders of fact anything of pertinence that you know concerning Dr. Casey and her activities that you think bear upon our considerations here. Yes, sir. Witness X began blandly and matter-of-factly to relate, as she might relate in a bureau field report, in flat, colorless narrative, the fundamental facts. Dr. Casey had been a person of interest since she arrived in America. She had a known relationship with leftists in England. She had been a member of the Fabian Society. Her father may have been a member of the IRA. And her mother was notorious for amoral and eccentric conduct, having been arrested more than once for public indecency. Concern for Dr. Casey, while continuously monitored since 1948, was muted until her convictions concerning the Vietnam War came to their attention. At least 2 years ago, Dr. Casey began to actively support the American-France Service Committee, sometimes attending its meetings, giving them funds for their anti-draft activities, and even assisting them in subverting the draft by encouraging young men to refuse induction or desert their country. Dr. Casey then sponsored and won university concession for public demonstrations against the war on the campus, and facilitated the activities of the American Friends Service Committee in its subversion of the military draft. The Bureau became increasingly concerned after the March on the Pentagon in 1967, when the left-wing pro-communist student groups began to ally openly and secretly with terrorist groups, known communist agitators, anarchists, and other subversives. At that time, Dr. Casey came under closer surveillance on the campus. In May of this past year, Dr. Casey began to harbor the principal organizer at the university for these subversive activities. You mean, you speak of Rachel Nelson, Rand interrupted. Yes, sir, Witness X continued. Rachel Nelson, a.k.a. Elizabeth Cohen, a.k.a. Moonbeam, a.k.a. Margaret Mead. She has assumed many disguises in many settings. She is a sexual pervert with no scruples concerning her perversion, as well as a violent subversive. She was planning with others to place LSD in the water supply of Chicago. We believe she intended to obtain the LSD from Dr. Casey, who has access to large quantities in the pharmaceutical coffers of the Department of Psychology at the university. At this point, I wanted to speak. I wanted to cry out. But Edith seemed placid and serene. Witness X continued. Dr. Casey not only tolerated Rachel Nelson's sexual perversions, she abetted them by facilitating the seduction of an innocent underage female student whom Dr. Casey had coerced to live with her. She furthered and compounded the sexual perversions with illicit behaviors among all the young female students she coerced into her house under the guise of her research. She provided them with illicit drugs for their abuse. She held consciousness-raising events, as she called them, in which she led nude and orgiastic uses of illegal psychotropic drugs and brainwashed these young girls with propaganda of radical European feminism and anti-American ideology. She extolled these girls to forsake marriage, family, decency, church, and America. I could no longer stand it. I stood up and turned to the chair. Don't you know that you're being lied to? The FBI agents in the room began to approach me. Ida said quietly, "Sit down, Dr. Hawthorne. It's nearly over." The FBI agents returned to their posts. But one, who now stood out in the floor, parallel to my chair, stared at me through his sunglasses in his intimidating pose. Rand solicited Witness X to proceed. Witness X concluded. We monitored Dr. Casey's activities during the convention and affirmed her relationships with its criminal element, as the other reports and photographs shown to you have revealed. We believe that Dr. Casey is a dangerous subversive, and we, the Bureau, shall certainly continue to monitor and, if necessary, curtail her activities for the sake of national security. Rand thanked Witness X. He turned toward the chair, who, blanched and uncertain, looked at Edith and asked, "Do you have anything to say, Dr. Casey?" Edith, as she always did when it was her turn, stood up next to her chair, putting her hand on the chair back and looking at the curtain behind which Witness X sat, addressed herself to her. "Rachel," she said, "you disguised yourself well, but you do not deceive me. The Rachel who was in my house was not simply a dissembler. I suppose that double agents are perhaps always sociopathic. My question is, were you sociopathic before you were recruited to counterintelligence? Or has it made you sociopathic?" Rand, his secret whisperer, leaning toward him from the chair behind him, stiffened and spoke up. "Dr. Casey, address the witness as Witness X. Will you answer, Rachel? Do you know?" "The transcriber will please delete the remarks of Dr. Casey," said Rand. The transcriber raised her hands from her machine and looked toward the chair with anxious concern. "That is not your prerogative, Dr. Rand," the chair declared, and looking at Edith said, "Do you believe the witness is Rachel Nelson referred to in this testimony?" "I am certain of it," said Edith. "As am I," said I, standing and turning to the chair to express my support. The chair seemed briefly dismayed, perhaps angry. She asked Rand, "Is this witness Rachel Nelson?" The man behind Rand stood and answered, "Her identity is classified. Any reference to her identity, any allegation of her identity, is a breach of the security agreement, which you have all signed." The chair stared back at him. The human machines in dark suits wearing sunglasses did not move. Edith sat down. I sat down. The chair looked at Edith anxiously and stood up. Rand seemed surprised, disconcerted. The chair announced, "This testimony is not acceptable. This is not Kafka's America, and this will not be the trial of Joseph K. I will accept no finding from this testimony as fact. This hearing is in recess until tomorrow at noon. Dr. Rand, I will speak to you in my office." I could have applauded, but I would have been alone. In the main, my fellow finders were completely confused and chagrined, except for Winslow, who fairly fumed, and who, for all the niceties of prudish rectitude that she professed, could curse like a lowbrow whore. Ushered out, if not to say forced out, by the ever-officious and brusque FBI, I was never so happy as I was then to find myself standing in sub-zero Chicago in windy weather. But I felt, as I say, rather elated.
When the truth is found to be